I don't think I ever found the what I was looking for to be accepted. I don't think I ever found that. I think I was never like black enough. I was never white enough, obviously. You know, I didn't even know how to connect to my white side. Like, I just knew I did things a little bit differently. Like, my mom would always tell me, like, I sound just like my father, certain phrases I would say or whatever, but like, I had nothing to go by. Like, you know what I mean? All I'm trying to do is be like my friends, you know what I mean? And they're the hoodest most ever, like, you know, like, so it was just like, I never found acceptance. I think I only found acceptance when I stopped looking for it.
Welcome to First Gens. This is a podcast about first generation Americans and filling in the blank beside the hyphen. This is your co-host, M. Sky Wilson.
Ratchet M. Sky Wilson?
I am whoever I want to be.
Okay, I can't force your identity. I see. I can't Thank influence. You.
And who are you, ma'am?
I am...
Do you forget who you are, sis?
Like, no, every time
you just had a mini existential crisis in front of my eyes.
A little bit. You could tell. You could see it.
I could see it.
Well, I was
like, her eyes went blank, y'all. Like, she had no idea who she was.
Well, I was trying to debate if I wanted to actually, you know, be someone who inspired me this week.
Okay, but we don't do that. This isn't the read.
I know, but every time.
This isn't the read.
When I just listened to the read, Kid Fury opened singing Avril Lavigne, and it just made me think of my brother. Because he loves Avril Lavigne.
Of course he does.
But, yeah, I don't want to be Avril Lavigne, so I'll just be myself.
I mean, there's more options than just Avril, but okay,
there's
sis.
So many more options.
So any hoozies, what are we here to talk about today?
Hoozies.
Hoozlewitzles.
Well, you know, we're keeping up the theme of our season, the complexities of complexion.
Yes, yes, yes.
Tapping on all the different aspects of colorism.
Tap, tap.
You know, tap, double tap.
Not double tap, because that means you like it.
Yep.
Oh, you're right. Yeah, we don't like colorism.
We don't
double tap colorism.
But we want to continually talk.
Exactly.
About, okay, cool. So, another aspect of colorism that we wanted to explore was snap judgment. Basically, like when...
that was a really bad snap.
Did you guys hear that? That was okay. A sad snap. Okay, that was it.
I'm usually a good snapper. I don't know what happened.
That's a very sad snap.
I'm very tired, y'all. I just haven't been sleeping right. I haven't had any milk to, like, keep my bones fortified.
Milk. You drink, you know? You do still drink, like, real milk.
I mean, I don't drink it, but if I have cereal or whatever, I'm going to put milk in it.
That's so weird. Like,
I'm not lactose intolerant like the rest of you people.
Okay, fine. You totally just came for
I did.
My dairy tolerance. And,
yeah.
Okay.
It's just like so many people are lactose intolerant, and I just pity you guys.
It sounds like a horrible lifestyle. It's a very sad life because cheese is life.
Cheese is great. Ice cream is great.
Wonderful things.
Yeah. Anyway, we're not here to talk about white things.
But it's funny you say that in the colorism series.
That's exactly why I said it, P.
Well, have you ever felt like you were stereotyped in regards to your complexion?
Definitely. I think that because I am lighter, I'm seen as nicer than I really am. I mean,
I'm actually not a nice person.
I'm so actually sad. Terrible. No, but like in terms of if there are two black people in a room, which usually it's only me and one other.
Yeah.
In terms of like work situations, then like. I'm deemed the safe one, quote unquote, like the nice one. Mm. You know, I have a friend who is darker skinned that I worked with at a former workplace. And it was just the three of us in terms of like black women in particular. And so two of us were light skinned and she's dark skinned. And she definitely got like the side eye from more folks than we did. Like the two of us who were lighter skinned were like... Mm. The buddy chummy ones for everybody else in the office, you know.
Interesting.
Yeah, it was trash.
That's actual garbage.
Yeah. Because also, I really don't... This sounds really terrible, but I really don't want to be buddy-buddy with people. Like, I really don't come to me. I don't know you. Please don't talk to me.
Especially in a work setting.
Exactly.
You just are there to work.
I don't care about your dog. I really don't care about your dog.
They just want you to care.
These are issues I need to work out in therapy. Go ahead, girl. Go ahead.
Oh, man. I mean, I definitely feel like there's a lot of stereotypes that come along with complexion.
Definitely.
And, you know, everything from, like, men who are on a lighter scale and category being grouped in, I don't know, with Drake somehow. I don't know how this happened or when he became the face of the light skin men of North America.
Well, I mean... the stereotypical thing with light-skinned men is like the whole like sensitivity thing.
And right.
Emotional. When you think of someone who is sensitive, Drake is the most sensitive mother effer out here.
Marvin's Room, he needed to
exactly.
get himself
and that's what
out.
Cemented him like as like the light-skinned prototype was Marvin's Room. Mm. Like after Marvin's Room, everyone was like, oh, these light skins in Marvin's Room. You need to come out of Marvin's Room, Chris Brown. You need to come out of Marvin's Room, but other light-skinned men, because I can't think of another one right now.
Chris Brown, you're right. He is also very emotional, but problematic to a whole nother.
Well, Drake is also problematic, but yes.
Yeah, he is. I guess it's just what kind of problematic you want to, you know, side or not side with. But then also, you know, you have like dark skin men
mm-hmm.
who may be seen as having more, you know, aggression or
hypermasculinity.
Yes. And so I think that, you know, we've talked a little bit about gender, you know, throughout this series already and how that correlates, you know, with complexion, et cetera. And so it's really interesting to see how it, you know, kind of plays out. And again, Sky and I have said this previously, being more brown skin, closer to the lighter scale, I feel like we haven't, you know, been oppressed, quote unquote. And so there's a lot of things that we
can't. In terms of skin color.
In terms of skin color.
I just want to put that out there. We are not, you know, like, I don't see color people. We know how.
We understand.
Yes.
We get it. But I remember just like being in college, and I think at Carolina, I think one of my like introductions to colorism and just color was when I was learning about NPHC sororities. And
can you explain what an NPHC sorority is for folks who may not know?
Yes. So NPHC stands for National Panhellenic Council. So that is basically historically Black sororities and fraternities that were founded by African American people. And so those sororities and fraternities have evolved a lot, have grown leaps and bounds since they were first, you know, created. But when you think about some of the first ones that were created, something that I learned, and I want to clarify, like, I am not a part of a sorority. I have friends and people that I love who are part of NPHC, and, you know, good for them. It was something not for me. But when I was like, you know, learning about it in college, I learned that AKAs were typically established for light skinned women.
Yep.
And Delta Sigma Theta then was created because they wanted to include brown and dark skinned women.
Yep.
In the NPHC world. And so obviously, again, you know, you see light skin, dark skin, everything in between non-Black people in these sororities and fraternities now.
Mm-hmm.
But it's very interesting how that divide and what those different organizations started at, what they meant. So when I was a freshman, I had, you know, like a few friends, like my close friends. And
only a few?
Wow. You make me feel like
that's what you just said. Like, you didn't have any friends.
I had friends,
girl.
Okay, but like my best friends. You know, like when you first get into college.
I'm also trying to help you out so people don't think that you're a complete loser.
Oh no, I promise. I'm
some people like her, guys, y'all.
But not at all. But okay, so there was like three of us that were like tight. And so one of my friends was biracial. My other friend who I like grew up with is light skin. And I, out of the three of us, was the darker one. And I'm not, again, dark skin. I do not, right. Again, I have a complex about my complexion, but I've come to terms that I am not dark skinned. But I definitely saw a difference in treatment, especially with male attraction in our group. And I definitely saw a lot of men kind of gravitate more initially towards my biracial friend.
Oh, yeah, because she had the pretty eyes, too, and quote, she had unquote, pretty eyes. And the good hair, quote, unquote.
You know what I mean? So all these, like, you know, beauty, whatever things. And then my other friend, that would, her complexion would be the first thing that a lot of people would kind of compliment, like side compliment her on. And it was something that irritated the hell out of her. She, to this day, still hates it.
Yeah.
And she had natural hair all throughout since we were in elementary school, never got a perm until college, everything. And so that was even something, you know, with, like, you know, her identity and who she was. And so it was just interesting because I think I kind of saw how they were kind of treated. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't necessarily like, oh, like I'm the lesser attractive one because of my complexion. But it's just interesting how I think people are, I don't know, just kind of treated or given some kind of value in our society in different ways. So, college.
So long ago. So old.
So old.
So many years.
But we're really, you know, happy to bring this story to you all today.
Yes, it's so great that he was able to give us a moment of his time, particularly to discuss masculinity, because that's obviously, and just like being a man, that's not something that either of us have experiences of. And so this was just a really enlightening conversation that we had with him.
This is Brian's story.
My name is Brian Milkey, and I identify as a Black American, Haitian, you know, if I get specific. I'm half white as well, but I don't really connect with that side too much because my father wasn't really in my life. We moved down here. I'm a military baby. So my mom, we moved down here when I was around 13. This was the sixth grade. Complete culture shock. We came from New York, and just north to south was instantly different. It was, I mean, I was kind of used to moving at that point, but it was something brand new for me as far as like being in the South and everything that comes with that, you know. It's more racially divided. I feel like I instantly, like first week, I realized that, you know what I mean. And it was a shock for me because we're in up north, upstate New York, where we came from. Everybody was everywhere. I mean, I came from a military, like, housing. So, like, there's Filipinos, white guys, everything. And it was just, like, you are who you are. It's, like, people judge you on, like, who you are, not, you know what I mean, what you look like and stuff like that. So, it took some getting used to, definitely. I know it was in the sixth grade. Because every time you move, they, the day before you, when you go to enroll, they just sit you in front of the classroom and just put you on display like a I gotten so used to that, but like instant, like the vibe was different instantly, like when I saw, you know what I mean, like my sixth grade classes, plus like where I went to middle school, that was like smack dab in the middle of the hood too. So it was like the people who went to the school was either like you were either from the hood or you were on from the rich side of town. And like I guess the way the zoning worked out, it was so like all my friends were either like well off white guys or like the hoodest dudes are like, I mean, how hood couldn't you be at 13? But it felt like that, you know what I'm saying? Like, so it was definitely a culture shock, you know what I'm saying? So here I am trying to find out where I fit in this without even knowing why, trying to figure out why is everything is like this, you know what I mean? And like, it's a lot for a 12, 13 year old kid, you know? I don't think I ever found the what I was looking for to be accepted. I don't think I ever found that. I think I was never like black enough. I was never white enough, obviously. You know, I didn't even know how to connect to my white side. Like, I just knew I did things a little bit differently. Like, my mom would always tell me, like, I sound just like my father, certain phrases I would say or whatever, but like, I had nothing to go by. Like, you know what I mean? All I'm trying to do is be like my friends, you know what I mean? And they're the hoodest motherfuckers ever. Like, you know, like, so it was just like, I never found acceptance. I only found acceptance when I stopped looking for it. biggest assumption people probably make about my cultural identity is that I'm Hispanic. I get that all the time. Like, if I ever talk to a Spanish person, there's a new Spanish guy at my job, it's, or girl, like, they start speaking Espanol, you know? I lived in Puerto Rico, too, we lived there for a while growing up, so. Yeah, I mean, I'm super used to that. People find it's so complicated that I call myself a Caucasian, and then, like, kind of, like, maybe narrows it down if you, like, think about it. Maybe, like, black people don't know if they don't think I'm like, I'm pretty black, too. You know what I mean? Like, no one really knows what I am. And I kind of grown to, like it that way, too. Like, I mean, I guess I've just grown to accept it, but it is what it is. I am who I am. I'm actually really connected to my Haitian identity. I just don't care to, like, broadcast it. I mean, it's the only culture that I've ever known, you know, from growing up in a... The only thing that, like, my mom still regrets to this day is not teaching us French and Creole, you know? But when she gets to yelling at me in Creole, I understand everything, you know? Femme la porte, like, tonel, ma foutu et calor, you know? Like, not that last one, but... I mean, that's all I've ever known when growing up, like, her side of the family. She's the youngest of seven. So I'm, like, the youngest of my generation, so... The last of all the kids at the seven, my aunts had, I'm the last one. So, like, all my first cousins are, like, my aunts and uncles, actually. And they're kind of, like, my grandmas and grandpas and stuff like that. You know what I mean? And all the cousins that I'm close with are my second cousins. And they call my aunts Memer, which is grandma in Creole. So it's always been, like, a weird ground because I'm... like the last of the old school, like the first of the new school type of thing. Cause even like my older cousins, they're more lenient than the old school, but they're still super old school. They were raised, a lot of them were born in Haiti and, you know, came over too, but still got those old school ways that they refuse to change. You know what I mean? My mom doesn't see any color. Like, I know it's a cliche thing, but she really doesn't. She goes for white guys. That's more like her swag. She recently, like, her last two boyfriends have been black, which surprised me. I was shocked. It was a pleasant surprise. But I mean, yeah, she's never seen color, and she's never taught us to, like, you know, see color. But I mean, this is America at the same time, you know what I mean? So, like, there was the idealism at home, you know what I mean, that, like, and I was just on my own to figure out what's the real of it, you know what I mean? But they also, like, confirm, like, a little bit of stereotypes just because, like, well, again, she was probably as idealistic as she was, she probably, like, as far as, like, when it comes to, like, the police, like, she was real, okay, like, these people are not your friends, like, they or just certain in the South too, like, once, like, she realized, like, what I was going through, like, little stories would happen or some, you know, so I was a little racism here and there. You come home and tell your mom and have that sit down, like, okay, this is, you're gonna have to deal with this, you know what I mean? This is what, so, like, be prepared for it, but, like, at the same time, don't assume that, you know, everybody out here hates you just because you're black. First off, I think the sensitive light skin stereotype is hilarious. I cry at every meme when there's a light skinned dude taking a mirror selfie. You know, like the pretty boys. It's just, you know, I hate to just say the same word all over, but colorism, like, it's more accepted. You know what I mean? Like, but I think for me, like, I know that people try to, like, try me like I'm soft a lot of times. Like, depends on where I'm at. Like, if I'm in a place where I know, like, if I'm dressed up, I'm like, all right, this guy, like, I can do whatever I want to him. I can treat him how I want to. This little, like, light skin chump, you know what I mean? Like, so I feel like I had to, like, I had a chip on my shoulder for a lot of my life just to, like, not over here, bro. Like, you know what I mean? Like, but as far as, like, dark skin men, the funny thing is, like, it's just, they look tougher talking about their emotions. You know what I mean? Like, light skinned guys look soft talking about their emotions. But when a dark skinned guy, like, starts going in, it's like, oh, he has a point. Like, I don't know. It seems like it's rooted in, like knowledge more than, like, emotion. As far as, like, the narrative, I'm not sure. Like, it's probably, like, super false, but that's what it seems like to me. Like, you know what I mean? Like, a Drake Marvin's room is not, like, who's a dark skin? Like, Tank, right? Like, a Tank, like, he's been talking about his emotions all the time, but, like, it's sexy, and it's, like, and this strong black man, he's okay to be vulnerable, you know what I mean? Like, when it's Drake, it's like, oh, man, get this soft dude. I'll rob him right now. I'll take everything on this soft guy, you know? Well, my mom is dark-skinned, and, I mean, I grew up in a single-parent household, so I think I'm darker than I really am. Like, when people call me, like, yellow, I look down, I don't see it, you know what I mean? Like, I'm red, I'm burgundy, you know? So, like, I know that about myself, like, I think I'm darker than I am. Like, everybody, my aunts and uncles, like, they're all dark-skinned, so, like, my whole family is, there's some white Haitians, like, one of my aunts are married to was a white Haitian, and their kids came out, you know, my complexion, but I definitely have a complex in there going on somewhere. I think I'm darker than I am. Yeah, for me, the darker, the more beautiful for me. Like, you know, that's my personal preference. It's funny, like, my girlfriend's light as me, but that's just how I grew up. You know what I mean? I always assumed that I was gonna have a dark skinned wife with some, like, chocolate babies. You know what I mean? That's, like, growing up, like, as a teen, like, oh, this is, you know, my checklist, you have to, you know what I mean? That's how I've always felt like that. Like, if some entertainer, like a dark-skinned entertainer comes through, like, the culture will anoint him because he represents, okay, this guy's clearly black, like, you know what I mean? So, like, with Drake, he's mixed, like, he still can, like, some people are mad he can play both sides, like, they don't like, you know what I mean? Like, for the black community, like, if there's a dark-skinned superstar, like, all right, he's ours. You can tell that he's ours, you know what I mean? Like, Drake, he can play both sides. Like, if he needed to get in his Jewish bag, he'll jump in his Jewish bag, you know what I mean? Everybody says the beauty is in the light-skinned girl, like, you know what I mean? With the light-skinned girl with the curly hair, you know what I mean? Like, and that's just because, like, I think, like, most Americans can, like, almost see themselves, even if, like, white Americans, like, they can relate almost, because it's closer to what they look like, you know what I mean? It's easier to understand someone when, like, you feel like you can relate. I've had Dominican girlfriends where, like, they will tell me stories that, like, how, like, it was like the French and the Spanish each own those two sides, so warring factions plus, like, physical differences made it easy to hate each other, you know what I mean? And just probably conditioned the people to not mess with the other side, you know what I mean? And then it grows legs, gets a mind of its own, and then it's passed down from generation to generation just through little things that kids pick up, you know, when their parents don't think they're listening. I think somewhere along the line, like, the Dominican, like, that became, like, sexy. Somewhere along the line, I don't know why, I feel like just because economically, you know, Haiti has been such a bad place for so long. The corruption is ridiculous there. Like, it's never gotten better. It's just getting progressively worse. And I think, you know, Dominican, they have the tourism, a better, safer for tourism. So, like, perception is that, you know, Dominican Republic's safer. Therefore, it's better. You know what I mean? Haiti is more dangerous. Therefore, like, you know, and it translates to the people are more dangerous. You know what I mean? You got to be careful. So then you're looking at these black faces, like, super dark skinned people, like, everybody's a threat. You know what I mean? And, like, then you go to the other side where, like, you're looking at the fair skinned Dominicans, like, all right, I'm safe now. You know what I mean? I'm pretty sure that has something to do with it. Plus, like, people are so poor. There's no, like, middle class. You're either, like, dirt poor or your family has money. You know what I mean? And so, like, crime comes with poverty. And a majority of a poor nation is just, it's going to happen, you know? The negative stories always, like, go farther than the positive stories. I mean, and people don't really care about the Caribbean like that much, right? So, like, you only have room for a couple of narratives, like, you know what I mean? No one cares enough to the world in general. Like, I mean, most people are just too consumed their lives, but, like, you know what? Like, no one cares about Haiti. The world doesn't care about Haiti, you know? Trump calling it a shithole country, you know what I mean? Like, so you don't have time. People aren't educated enough to, like, find other narratives. It's just what they heard, you know what I mean? Like, and that just goes a long way. Like, one, if you pick up one thing from Haiti and then, like, although, oh, I heard this and it must be true. I remember, I just want to share a story. It just stuck with me to this day, probably. I was a kid in New York. Most of my family was in the city, so we lived upstate. We would go down for the spend summers in the city. And it was some pool party. I was a kid playing in the pool with my cousins. And it was just Haitians there. It was just a big Haitian gathering. And there was somebody was hating on me, somebody calling me, oh, there's like, he's a white boy, you know what I mean? Like, but then one of my cousins like, no, he's a black man, you know, like, really stuck up for me. And I didn't know this at the time, and she had told me later of all those things, and I was just like, yo, how, like, we're family, why are you looking at me like that? Like, I can't, why am I not Haitian enough? Like, why? Because, like, I don't speak French. That's a big, like, for the old school Haitians, like, that's a big, like, I'm not of the culture, you know what I mean? So, like, it's outside of, like, my family, like, I don't feel like I was, like, fully accepted as a Haitian. And, like, I've never been accepted as a white person, white guy. So, like, I just pretty much had to come to grips with, like, there's not too many half Haitian, half white people out here, you know what I mean? So, like, it's hard for me to, like, it's hard to find a group that, like, all right, you know exactly what I'm going, you know what my life was like. Like, I can, because I grew up in America, I identify and I relate to, like, just the black American struggle, not even the Haitian, like, struggle. But at the same time, like, I don't get that in return, you know what I mean? But I feel like that just made me stronger, you know what I mean? It's just knowing that all I got is myself. Like, you got you. If you don't have you, no one's gonna have you, you know what I mean? Like, I remember, like, growing up, there would be no black people in commercials. Then there was that one black guy in the commercial. And then the Asian guy came in, you know what I mean? But now they're like, it's a black, everybody in the commercial's black. There's a hip-hop beat in the background. They're saying, like, swag or drip, or, you know what I mean? Like, I remember, like, they would say, like, they would try it and it used to be corny. Now they're like, it feels natural, you know what I mean? It's like, you're growing up now, like, this is what you grew up seeing. Of course, you're gonna, like, everybody's gonna be on the same, like, almost the same playing field. You know what I mean? Like, we had none of that growing up. Like, it was a big deal. And I would think I was, like, 11 or 10 when, like, BET first came on the air. Like, and I would, and my white friends were, like, would get mad at me for watching BET. It's like, it was, like, reverse racism or something like that. Like, that back when, like, MTV play videos, and, like, I would go to BET because that's where I, what I liked was on there. But, like, it's like, oh, check out MTV, you know, VH1 was dead after that. Most proud to be Haitian American probably comes from just my family. I just seen how strong, like, when I hear this, I get the stories now, the real stories of, like, what really happened back in the day. Like, you know, when you're a kid, they just want to protect you, so they don't tell you. But, like, what my mom went through when coming to America and like the whole family and what my grandfather like did in the 60s and 70s as a Haitian immigrant like in the United States. Like, he had like some scholarships, full rides to Michigan. I don't know for what. I don't know too much about him, but I know he was in and out of America, like being accepted in places most Haitians don't get a seat in. The immigrant family, they're like always telling you like you got to work harder than everybody else. You know what I mean? And like just the old school values that were instilled in you. I'm so appreciative of that now. I'm so appreciative of how I was raised. I hated it growing up, but like now I get it. You know what I mean? Like now I can walk into any room and maintain eye contact with anybody. You know what I mean? It just helps me navigate throughout life so much better, so much easier. Having these little lessons that I forgot about that just comes into play every once in a while. You know, that's basically like the source of my like Haitian pride is like toughness that we grew up with, for sure.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed what you heard, subscribe and rate us on Apple Podcast. It helps other people find us and truly, truly makes a huge impact on the success of this podcast. We can also be found on Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher, and truly anywhere else you get your podcast. Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at FirstGens. That's the number one, STGENS. Plus, get tons of bonus content on our website, firstgenspodcast.com. First Gens was created by me, Perrine DeShield, and is co-hosted by my lovely and talented cousin, Sky Wilson, and I. Our musical composer is the wonderful and talented Nick Stubblefield. A huge thank you to our special guest for sharing their First Gens experience today. First Gens is a proud member of Huga, a co-working space based out of Charlotte, North Carolina. Thank you so much for all of your love and support.
Yeah, yeah.
You did so good.
Bam, 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 bam. Gotta add one of those.